On today's College Football Inquirer, Jaden Daniels versus Lane Kiffin, the battle over number 5 at LSU. How did this happen so soon after Lane Kiffin got there? Plus, private equity comes to the Yankees? What does that mean for college football? Because it does actually mean something. And Michigan versus Ohio State. Does Michigan need to hate Ohio State? We'll discuss today on the College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Stephen Godfrey and Ross Dellinger. I am Andy Staples. And of course, that university that Ross used to cover as a beat writer is in the news again, because it's always in the news. We talked about this a little bit last week. I mentioned that there was a storm potentially brewing at LSU over the number 5, because it was given to DJ Pickett, the sophomore corner, and it used to be worn by Jaden Daniels, the Heisman Trophy winner who now plays for the Washington Commanders. Well, guess what? Jaden Daniels sent a cease and desist letter to LSU saying, do not use my name or my image to promote anything involving LSU, because I am mad that you gave my number to DJ Pickett. Ross Dellinger, what the hell is going on now?
Yeah, this I was just seeing like the actual letter in print leaked out or was posted online by Mike Garofalo, and I was just scanning it over, trying to figure out exactly what it says, but nothing too surprising. This is maybe, to me, this is just really bizarre. I know, Andy, you kind of maybe hinted that maybe something like this would be a problem, but I'm like looking at the sort of the reaction just on social and maybe some text messages and stuff. And this is a good way for a quarterback to never be welcome back to his former school.
Yeah. I don't think Jaden's winning right now in the PR battle. I think Jaden, or possibly Jaden's mom, thought this was going to go differently. But the LSU fans squarely behind Lane Kiffin on this. And it's interesting because I was, you know, I wrote a column about this at On3. I posted on our message board on our LSU site, the Bengal Tiger. And the fans are like, hey, you know, there's a ton of numbers. Like, maybe we shouldn't just be soft retiring numbers, because I guess we should explain. This is one of those unwritten rules situations that, Ross, you covered LSU. I feel like LSU has more of these than any other school. The only number that is actually out of circulation is Billy Cannon's number. Billy Cannon won the Heisman Trophy in 1959. His number 20.
59.
Yeah. His number 20 is retired. And that's the only one that they can't officially use again, according to the LSU's policy. But the soft policy has been the other Heisman Trophy winner, so Joe Burrow's number 9, Jaden Daniels' number 5, would not be given out. Lane Kiffin says that DJ Pickett was promised in recruiting, which, by the way, Brian Kelly signed DJ Pickett, that DJ Pickett was promised number 5. He didn't get it. He had to wear number 3 last year, I believe. And DJ Pickett walks out for camp in number 5, and all of a sudden, kaboom.
I know most schools have some jersey number reservation. I don't know, Andy, if it feels like there's a ton of unwritten rules. I have more questions. I don't know if there's a take here yet, other than I agree with you on the fact that right now this looks like an unforced error on the part of Jaden Daniels. Let's start at the top with Jaden Daniels. I would probably be really worried about what's going on in camp for the Commanders right now if I was Jaden Daniels. You know, some of the luster has worn off, as these things are wont to do in the NFL. And he's entering, I wouldn't necessarily say a prove it year, but there's a lot of questions around the Commanders and Jaden Daniels specifically. And the idea that he is looking backwards at all to a kid wearing a number at LSU is kind of shocking to me. I think the playbook for this, so there's 3 Heisman winners at LSU, right? There's Billy Cannon, long time ago, 1959. Then there's 2 transfer quarterbacks. There's a very easy playbook to copy here, and it's Joe Burrow, who is beloved by LSU fans. Now, partially because he led the team to an undefeated national championship and vaults the 2019 Tigers into one of those like greatest of all time team debates. And so, but still, Jaden Daniels could just easily follow the playbook on how to be a good transfer alumni from Joe Burrow. I really am at a loss here, Ross, unless there's some sort of like local context that we don't have as to why Jaden Daniels cares at all.
Yeah,
I'm missing something.
I think we all are. I'm kind of confused as well. I don't think there's something out there except that perhaps he was told or was intimated to him. I think that's what the letter says, that nobody would wear his number in the same, you know, the same sort of theme for Joe Burrow. You know, Andy mentioned like LSU is like a little different than other schools because of their sort of tradition with jersey numbers. You know, they have 18, which was Matt Mauk's jersey number. It led LSU to the 2003 national championship. And that's kind of given to like a leadership type of role position. It's awarded every fall camp, I think. And there's number 7 as well, which obviously was worn by Tyrann Mathieu, Leonard Fournette, Patrick Peterson at LSU. And that's kind of given to more like, you know, the team's leading sort of playmaker. So there's a lot of like this jersey sort of situation at LSU that sort of kept traditional. And, you know, did they break some kind of promise? Did the school with Jaden Daniels? I mean, I guess maybe, but golly, like, is it that big a deal? Yeah, it just doesn't seem like it's that big a deal. It seems like there should be things he should be worrying about other than this.
For clarity, the 7 and the 18, I know a lot about this, married into an LSU family, very familiar, went to Ole Miss. So like at Ole Miss, every year, a player with a different number on defense will be awarded the Chucky Mullins Award. And it's right. Leadership, playmaking, sort of a combo thing. Chucky Mullins is a defensive back who suffered a spinal cord injury, I believe it was 1989, and passed away shortly thereafter. Really kind of he and Christopher Reeve about the same time really sort of highlighted on a national level the spinal cord injuries. That number is given as a courage award, and then you didn't have 38, and then you wear 38. Are 7 and 18 like that? Because then I'm starting to understand why. Did Leonard Fournette always have 7? Just I'll use him as an example.
I think he did. No. You know what? When he got to LSU, I can't remember if he was given 7 or for one. I want to say, as surprising as this is, that he wore 5 when he enrolled. I can't remember. I can't remember.
All right, Andy, I take it back.
This is ridiculous. Do some Googling.
Well, the 7 thing is, you know, Patrick Peterson, Allie Highsmith actually worked before Patrick Peterson. He was also a very good player at LSU.
At LSU.
It sort of became a thing after Patrick Peterson, and then 18 obviously became a thing after Jacob Hester. So like I said, this is what I said this at the beginning, way more unwritten rules at LSU than most.
Yeah, places. No, just, yeah, I take it back, something. Man. I take it back. Andy. Is there anything like this at Florida?
No, Florida, the funny thing was, it reminds me of a story. My friend Steve Gorton, who wrote for the school paper about the same time I did, he's a little bit older than me, though, once asked Steve Spurrier, hey, you gave Ben Hanks' number to this freshman. What about that? And Ben Hanks had worn number 11, which had been Steve Spurrier's number at Florida. And Spurrier just sort of looked at him like, Ben Hanks' number?
That's mine.
But that's, yeah. And I think 11 was out of circulation for a bit at Florida, or Spurrier didn't give it out too freely initially. But like 15, which is Tim Tebow's number, 7, Danny Werfel's number, those were given out very quickly after their Heisman seasons. It was not, there was no...
Okay.
No hesitation, really.
Look, I have to insert something real fast just for context here, because I'm trying to be as polite to LSU as possible about this, because I do know the more time you spend with a program, the more you hear about these sort of really weird colloquial sort of traditions. I double checked. So my alma mater has 4 retired numbers. Chucky Mullins, the 2 Mannings, and then Ben Williams was the first program's first African-American varsity player. So you can probably imagine why they retired that number. A little bit of Mississippi history there. Do you know the school with the most amount of retired numbers.
Is it Michigan?
I don't know if you guys would guess it if I gave you 100. It's in the FBS. It's in the Power Four.
Interesting.
From a quick search, an ad hoc search, and I don't really trust AI, but here we are. Pittsburgh has 10 retired numbers.
Wow.
Wow.
10.
At That's what a point? Lot. Are they out of circulation?
They are retired numbers. One-tenth of the numbers available.
Some of these I know that are obvious. A young man named Mike Ditka. Young man named Tony Dorsett. Okay.
Yeah. Dan Marino,
pretty good
I'm
defensive
sure.
player. I'm not seeing Dan Marino, which makes no
what?
Sense.
Wow.
I'm like I said again. Pittsburgh has the so and then Wikipedia, which I trust marginally more, says that Pittsburgh does lead with 10. There's a young man named Aaron Donald who played there. They retired his number. He's pretty good. Hugh Green, et cetera, and so on. I have to then maybe if there's a take here or something controversial to say, one, Jaden Daniels needs to worry about the NFC East and nothing else. Literally yeah. nothing. Worry about the Eagles. Worry about what's going on with your offense. Worry about what's going on with your defense. Okay. That's it. Godspeed. Don't bother with this. Do you think, honestly, do you think if someone went to Joe Burrow right now and said, hey, Joe, we're giving out, Lane's going to give out your number. Do you think Joe Burrow would care?
I do, because they would have already done this to defuse the situation. If they gave out
walk
number
that
nine,
out for
Jay
me. Walk
Daniels
that out.
Has no
yeah.
leg to stand on.
Okay. But do you also think, like, this is also, and this is where the rest of the world has to teach Lane Kiffin how to be a human being. This is where Lane really, regardless of who did what when and who's responsible and Kelly recruited him and promises were made, obviously, Jaden never played for Lane Kiffin and the staff. But this is where you have to show your human credential. And it would have been great for Lane to pick up the phone and maybe call the Heisman winning quarterback from the program he now coaches.
That happened. So
in advance of all this?
Yes. All of this happened in advance. That's why this is happening now. Because it was done
and then,
anyway.
And Daniels still said absolutely not.
Right. Mm.
Okay, look, hey, human credential point for Lane Kiffin. Good job, buddy. All right. So eventually we're gonna teach you how to act in public. I'm proud.
So
look at all this progress he's making.
If Lane Kiffin wins at LSU, none of this yeah. matters.
None of this matters now.
Jaden Daniels thinks.
Yeah, none of this matters now. Yep.
I know,
it does.
But it won't matter to him. It's one of those weird things, like if he doesn't win and in 3 years or 4 years, whatever, it falls apart, this will be in the first couple paragraphs and this is where the downfall started. It only matters if he wins or loses. So like to me, if I'm Lane Kiffin, I'm gonna put myself in his shoes, and I have a 6'3" freakazoid corner who can help me win a bunch of games now, and he wants to wear number 5. Guess what? Let's win some games with number 5.
Yeah, go ahead,
Russ.
No,
I was going to say Jaden Daniels is what's really weird here is that you have this hiccup in LSU history, and Jaden Daniels is really sort of the high point of Brian Kelly. There's not a lot else people are really going to hang their hat on with the Brian Kelly era. You had a Heisman winner,
the Alabama overtime sort of game. That's about it.
Yeah,
you know?
And they won the SEC West with Jaden Daniels, but that was the year before. That wasn't the Heisman year. The Heisman year, they didn't win the SEC West. They didn't win the SEC. They didn't win the national championship. And is that Jaden Daniels' fault? Absolutely not. He was amazing. Their defense sucked. But I don't think if I was an LSU fan, I don't think I'm really that keen on celebrating that. And that's where Burrow has the advantage here.
Yeah,
Burrow
that's what I said. At the top
title.
Yeah. But again, let me appeal to Jaden Daniels for a second. The probability of you having a 4 Super Bowl winning MVP career in the NFL is not great, because it's not great for anybody. It's really, really hard to do that. Chances are, I'm going to speak very generically here. Chances are, when you are done with your playing time as a professional and you are done with the sport of football, it would behoove you financially to have a good relationship with Louisiana State University and its football program.
Yeah.
So maybe I tried the human credential test on the wrong individual here. If Jaden Daniels and his camp is kind of playing the long game here, look, I hope you have a great career. I hope you win a bunch of MVPs, Super Bowl, whatever. But again, statistically, the odds are against you in the NFL. It's really, really hard. But one thing you've already done is you've won a Heisman in an SEC school. And that does mean something and will mean something for a very long time if you can manage your relationship with the university accordingly. And so I think you might be cutting your nose off to spite your face.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Bryce Underwood in Michigan a little bit later in the show and how he feels about the Ohio State rivalry. But this is something that I think we're getting into in the NIL era with the guys that are in college. But then obviously when you're out of college, this has always been a thing. Give the fans what they want.
Yeah.
Just make them happy. And this is not going to make them happy. Like, you throwing a fit because Lane Kiffin gave your number to DJ Pickett. And by the way, DJ Pickett, also going to be a first-round draft pick like you. Probably going to be a real good NFL player. May intercept you a few times.
That would be fun.
Also, one thing we haven't talked about is just the sort of tradition, I guess, of coaches promising players
numbers,
jersey numbers.
Dude.
Yeah, which is fascinating. By the way, to correct the record, Leonard Fournette wore 5 in high school. And and I can't remember who at LSU was wearing 5, but I think maybe that Leonard wanted to wear 5, but couldn't, right? So that was a whole jersey. I remember that being a jersey controversy type of situation. So he did wear 7. He started to wear 7 his freshman year. But this whole thing was,
hey, you're our biggest recruit. We can't give you the number you want. Here's this number that we honor people with, because the Honey Badger just wore a number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tyrann was another one. Do we think, last thing about this, and then we have to get out of what is befuddlingly stupid controversy.
I'm going to stop you right there.
Okay.
It is befuddlingly stupid controversies like this that make this the best sport in the world.
No doubt. I'm not saying we shouldn't talk about it. I'm just saying that, like, I have a little bit of whiplash on this show where we go from this senator is doing this, this conference commissioner is doing this, and I have a guy at Commander's mini at camp right now who's like, I'm pouting about a college I played for 1 year's number.
And the fan, like, the average fan cares a hell of a lot more about what happened with this guy in D.C.
No doubt.
Than what happened with those other guys in D.C.
That's a wonderful transition.
The threat of, like, also, I don't exactly know what the threat here is. I mean, does LSU have to tear down all of its, like, posters or pictures of Jaden Daniels inside its facilities? Can it not use them on billboards? Like, I don't know what this means exactly.
No, I think it's a loss of equity for Daniels. I think it's not like LSU has to tear him down like he was. It's O.J. Simpson or something. I think it's just it's going to be really stupid for Daniels to have a bad relationship with that fan base.
We're not going to put you in hype videos from now on. That's what you told us. Don't put you in hype videos.
I mean,
from now
probably
on.
Not.
That's really what this is.
Which, by the way, hurts Daniels more than anybody, I feel like.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah. It's normal to kind of purge the previous administration, which is, I mean, boy, you want to talk about two dynamically different personalities and eras, Brian Kelly to Lane Kiffin. You would like to have clips of a Heisman winner. I think how many hype videos have we seen before players run out of a tunnel? And there's always that rapid cut, kind of jump cut montage of sort of greatest moments. Hey, to wit, Billy Cannon will be in the hype video, right? Well, the 1959 Heisman winner will be in the hype
video.
Here's
the thing with Jaden. All they're going to do is take the Jaden scenes out and add a couple more Joe Burrow plays. Like, it's not that complicated.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Of the popularity of those two, obviously one won a national championship and went undefeated. So I think they would probably prefer to put him in more anyway. But this whole thing is just dumb.
This is what I was trying to say. And then Andy got
so
mad.
Dumb.
So this is what I was saying before Andy got mad. Do you think that... the classic Don Draper axiom, that's what the money's for. Do you think the NIL of all of this is going to maybe assuage the, well, I was promised number X? Like, do you think?
Apparently not. DJ's probably being paid pretty well.
This might be one of those Ryan Clark moments for all of us. Although Andy did play the game. What was your number, Andy?
Well, I didn't have one. And then Thaddeus Bullard didn't qualify. They gave me 53 at the end of the season. Daddy's, well, now Bullard, we know how, by the way, became
thank you Thaddeus
in the WWE. Tremendous. He was a really good football player at Florida. Was a student body vice president. Like he was light years ahead of me. But he got there the next year. Got a different number. Tommy Hilliard was awarded 53. That was a scholarship center that they had signed. I didn't really get to that.
Andy, you were so talented that you didn't have a number to start the season.
Yeah, you defied metrics.
They gave me 60 on my practice jersey, which was worn by backup long snapper Fred Hagberg, and I believe somebody else too.
What a great half sentence. Backup long snapper Fred Hagberg.
Yeah. Perfect.
Fred's a good dude.
It's just a great descriptor. Hey, I'm backup long snapper Fred Hagberg. All right, get us out of here, Andy.
Listen. I'm here for all of your Tempest in a Teapot controversies, college football, because
man,
this is a special one. I got LSU fans yelling at me on the message board. Why would you bring Lane into this? I'm like, because Lane made the decision.
Oh yeah,
this is part of the job.
It is weird to be living inside the Sweet Baby Lane space right now with LSU because he hasn't coached a game for him yet. I have forgotten, and Ross, you can remind me of this, but I obviously a lot of familiarity with LSU, but like how saccharine sweet and really like total fealty towards the head coach. I remember having logicless arguments with my in-laws over. I'm like, hey, you know, Brian Kelly, probably not the best fit. Brian Kelly, probably not the best method. You don't know what you're talking about. It was Notre Dame that held him back. Like, shout out to my in-laws who are probably watching. I love this moment we're in with LSU and Lane Kiffin because it is the honeyest of honeymoons until it's not.
Yeah.
And we all know how that fan base, pitchfork just right behind the back.
I remember fans yelling at me about this a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now they wouldn't spit on him if he was on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's because they saved his soul, Andy. Didn't you see that E60 thing? Oxford saved his soul.
Two things can be true, Godfrey. That's what Kiffin told me.
Oh, that Oxford did save his soul and then he got the hell out for Baton Rouge?
Yeah. That's
I love everything. Hey.
He didn't tell me that. He told Marty McGee that.
Yeah, well, because didn't McGee kind of run after him for saying, hey, everything you said to me in that special was Fugazi, right? It was BS. Hey, I haven't seen any of the clips. I intercepted this the other day talking to a radio person. If that's true, bully for Ryan McGee for saying, hey, man, we built an entire special around.
Yeah.
We built an entire special around you, and then you lied through your teeth the entire time. Which, by the way, is what I talked to him, Smith from Vanity Fair, experienced as well when Lane sat for that profile in the spring. There's a little bit of a recurring theme here, which is that if you sit down with Lane Kiffin, you might get snowed.
Also, Lane Kiffin would like to win.
Okay.
And so again, when the Freakazoid Corner, who plays for you now, is like, hey, I'm supposed to get number 5. The path of least resistance on that one is let the man wear number 5. And that's what's happening. So
I mean, Lane's not wrong this time.
Mm-mm.
Lane's not wrong.
No.
That's what I was trying to point out, but the LSU fans think I'm insulting Lane anyway. But that's okay.
It's because he's their beautiful baby boy who's going to win him 11 national titles and do yoga. Mm-hmm. Talk about how Baton Rouge saved his soul, which I don't think is a sentence anyone's ever uttered.
I mean, maybe not 11, but he might win a couple. He might.
Saban's coming back too. I heard that.
A reminder, if you'd like to watch us, there will be a new place to do that starting August 27th. The Yahoo Sports College Football Channel will be launching on YouTube on August 27th. So you can see our beautiful faces. You can see Ross's backward hat. You can see, he'll be wearing toques come wintertime. The ski hats will come in.
Oh, man. Toque rotation is coming back. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Once we get into those Tuesday night playoffs, we get toque season. Thank you, Andy. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You're going to get all of that.
Yeah,
on the Yahoo Sports College Football YouTube channel, which launches on August 27th. When we come back, though, a private equity deal that sounds like something I could have cooked up for college football, but it's not. It's for the New York Yankees. But what does it mean? or sports like college football quite a bit, actually. We'll talk about it when we come back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and I sent the gentleman that I do this show with a text message the other day. I said, look, Alabama's taking out a PE deal because it can't compete with Texas for players. And I said, oh, no, wait, it's the Yankees taking out a PE deal because they're struggling to compete with the Dodgers. And that's what actually happened, guys. The New York freaking Yankees are getting a $2.6 billion infusion from a group called Apollo Sports Capital. Apollo gets a seat on the Yankees board. They get equity in the Yankees. Now, MLB rules limit that equity to 15% at most. We don't know exactly how much it's going to be, but we keep saying, you know, these are public trusts, these college football programs. If the Yankees can do this, I'm pretty sure your favorite college football team might be doing this soon.
For disclaimer, Apollo also owns us. Now we're partners with the New York Yankees.
Thank you.
we're partners with the New York Yankees. We're all in the same.
We're part of their $1 trillion in assets. Yeah.
That's horrible.
Yeah, we have a lot of
partners. Thank you for doing that,
probably.
Ross.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing that, especially after Tuesday's episode where I screamed about conflict of interest for an entire segment.
Yes. This is wild.
Never mind. We're going to welcome the Yankees in and everything's fine. Next segment. No, I'm just kidding. When Andy dropped this in, Ross, my first reaction was that I wonder if this changes public perception when more inevitable PE deals come for college programs, and that people say, hey, this isn't so predatory if a brand as powerful and ubiquitous as the Yankees are doing it.
Well, I think the MLB has a limit on how much equity you can sell because it is still somewhat predatory.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it still functions the same way as PE does, right?
Yeah. I think, and this is, correct me if I'm wrong, this has been done not to this extent, I guess, in the NFL, right? There's been some PE firms that own a small share of NFL programs or franchises, right? I feel like.
Didn't they open it up to that? Recently to allow for that.
Okay, to allow
yes,
for it.
Yes, they did.
To get back to Godfrey's question, I don't think there's any doubt that the biggest sort of like ramifications to this is more of a like a warming up to this happening and this being a more normal thing. We saw it happen and we talked about it a lot in the Premier League, right? It's happened in the soccer, European soccer quite a bit. It's not coming. It's here, right? I mean, from college sports perspective, it's here. We've seen Utah and we've seen the Big 12 and plenty of others are going down the road. Like it's going to continue to happen.
End up doing it, but
they were close, right? And some of individual, I think some individual schools are going to continue to do it. LSU, we talked a lot about what LSU is sort of working on. Like, I don't think there's any doubt that it's going to happen more and more. And this stuff like this does sort of give, more credence to the idea of doing it. But as Andy said, there's still that 9% or 12% that you have to eventually pay back plus whatever capital was infused. And that's a problem for many people who just think of it as more of a payday loan. The most interesting thing for about this is that Apollo gets some like control, a vote on the board. Yeah. And that's what the Big Ten, the Big Ten's deal, the Big 12's deal with like Weatherford, Redbird, doesn't have any control for them, on in any way. But like the Big Ten, what the Big Ten was looking at, which was more of a traditional deal, there was going to be at least one seat in one vote on the Big Ten Enterprises board for, for whatever the capital, it's University of California, whatever, pension fund.
was going to have a teacher's seat pension on the board. Fund.
Yeah, yeah, they were going to have a seat on the board of Big Ten Enterprises, which scared a lot of people.
I like the idea of a bunch of third grade teachers from Encino coming in and like directing traffic. The mentality here is the same, which as sort of insane as it is to say what I'm about to, the Yankees feel like they can't catch up with the Los Angeles Dodgers from a payroll perspective. The baseball team I cheer for, the Atlanta Braves, are owned by Liberty Media. Liberty Media is a publicly traded company. And so we do get to look at the quarterlies and the disclosures. And so it gives you a little bit more of an insight as to, you know, the Atlanta Braves usually keep a top 10 payroll. And you can tell where their expenditures are, what they're making money off of. They were pioneers in sort of the mixed-use stadium ownership, and they yield a ton of money relative, not Dodger money, but a good chunk of money off of, hey, come eat at this restaurant that pays us money. Come do this. Stay in the hotel. We're going to own your entire experience in sort of a Disney-type mentality. The reason I bring that up is that's innovative. I did a whole episode of Phantom Island about this, about stadiums now trying to bridge into mixed-use development. It still pales in comparison to top-end haves. So in baseball, we don't know what's about to happen after this season. We're all pretty confident there's going to be a lockout. We're all talking out of our rears here because we cover college football. What I'm really curious about is this. I know there's never going to be a salary cap in college football, okay, regardless of what happens in Congress, because the one thing that sports lacks, with the exception of the Los Angeles Clippers, are insane boosters who are going to run side deals. So I don't think you can ever really arrest the capitalism of college sports. My question for the Yankees is, what if a cap shows up or some sort of salary apron like the NBA has? Or more importantly, what if there's a floor for the franchises that don't spend money like Pittsburgh? So do you need Apollo if we're all capped going into the 2027 MLB season and beyond? I know college football's mentality is to chase as much revenue as possible to keep up with Texas and Ohio State. I don't know if the Yankees work the same way. Mm.
So I'll be interested to see if Hal Steinbrenner advocates for a cap during the lockout.
It feels like now he wouldn't.
I'm assuming the owners will all put up a united front in an attempt to get a cap.
Okay.
Even though that doesn't help the Dodgers. That doesn't help, presumably, the Yankees.
But, yeah, why would they vote for it?
It's funny because this is a really interesting parallel to college football.
Where, it absolutely
is. Baseball and college football are the closest things.
Yeah. Yep. Yes. Yeah, it's right, Andy. That's a great point. It's a good segue into the sort of Ohio States and Oregon's and Texas, maybe not wanting a cap. I'm not saying they voted against a cap. I'm not saying that. But you would think they have more money than everybody, and they have more sponsors and brand sponsors than everybody to go over the cap with NIL deals. So they probably don't necessarily want some hard cap, especially if it's going to be low end. I mean, think about the $48.8 million cap they agreed on in the bill, like the new cap. And think about, let's just take Texas. Just Texas football, just the football at Texas makes around $190, $180 million. So 50% of that is around $90 million. So that, if you use the NFL model, should be the Texas football players' cap. 90 million, and we're talking about 48.8.
Yeah.
For all sports. Yeah.
The top 10 most value. I'm curious, and I don't want to make this a baseball conversation. That's not why we're here. But one of the interesting things is you got 30 odd franchises. And Andy, if the top 10 or even the top 5 or 6, I'm looking at the Forbes valuation, which was done last summer. So in order, Yankees, Dodgers, Red Sox, Cubs, and Giants are the top 5. Let's just use those for a second. By the way,
And by the way, the Lakers selling yesterday also changes the map of all that. Not to bring another.
Apparently, you don't flip a house, flip a franchise, because that guy owned it for 1 year and made 25%.
Also, the Dodgers owner. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Who is under investigation by the SEC. And I'm not talking about Greg Sankey. So shout out. I don't know, Andy, if I'm the Yankees, Dodgers, Sox, Cubs, et cetera, if I do want to push that aggressively for a cap, because then that does take an inherent advantage away. Now, Ross, let me ask you this. The 10th most valuable team last summer, weirdly, are the Angels, and their valuation was $2.75 billion. The Yankees are number one with $8.2 billion. That's a massive amount of separation. Mm. And when you get down to the bottom of the league, they're much closer together. This is essentially college football, right? Mm-hmm. Like this is where like you can't really arrest the Texas's and the Ohio State's financial development by any measure. Yeah. This really is the same problem.
It is. It's very comparable. So I think Godfrey, I put it in a story from research, like data stuff, and I can't remember the exact. Don't hold me to the exact numbers, but I think it's something like the top eight brands in college football account for 40% or 50% of like our of the viewership, like are involved in the games. It's something like that. Yeah. So the separation is drastic. I mean, it's why we hear a lot about the Super League and why the fear of the Super League is what it is, because the top 8, 10, 12 brands are so much bigger than everybody else and so much more valuable.
One thing I'll point out, teams 16 through 30 on this valuation, guys. So just to review real fast, I said 8.2 all the way down to 2.75 billion. That's a pretty significant difference from number one to number 10. From 16 to the very bottom, the White Sox are worth exactly 2 billion. And then you go all the way to the bottom, the Miami Marlins are worth 1.05. So you have basically half the league operating in the 0 to 2 billion space. Again, this is that's the, what do we call them? The middle two inside of the Power Four.
It's
right?
College
that's
football. All, yeah. I mean, it's crazy because that's your ACC and Big 12. And then
now, I guess let me spin this positively. I'm going to try here. The Padres, the Brewers for a while have had the best record in baseball and really are defying odds with their
Royals
roster construction.
Have been good.
Yes.
The Rays have been good.
So it's not impossible to build a contender. It's just going to be a lot hard. You can never go blow for blow with the Dodgers and probably the Yankees and Sox, right? But it is possible to build a title contender in this space. Now, my question back, let's flip it, because I talk to coaches all the time who feel like it really is not possible to build a contender. So outside of Texas Tech, inside the Big 12, BYU thinks they can, or the ACC minus Miami right now. I mean, it's really a question of like, let me throw this back, Andy. Can Clemson, maybe that's my best comp, really believe it can construct a roster financially that's capable of winning another national title?
Yes, because they did it when only four teams could do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So well, let me go down a step. If I'm Georgia Tech, if I'm Kansas State.
Indiana just won the national title, Godfrey.
Okay, Kansas State. Houston. Right.
Houston has a billionaire.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not. He has not decided to play that way though yet.
Correct.
He really has not.
Yeah.
I don't know
Tillman
if you
Fertitta
can blame
has
the
not
Rock
acted like Cody Campbell in this.
Nope.
He has the last time I talked to him, he really said he wanted to be genuinely focused on the Rockets. He's more involved in Houston basketball.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't
the
know if that's just
bears his name. Yeah.
He's also the ambassador to Italy right now, so he's got a lot on his plate.
Yes.
He's a little busy. I guess the comp here is solid, but can you be the Milwaukee Brewers 4, 5, 10 times over in college football? Because we're in hope season, boys. It's August 13th as we record this.
The difference
right?
is you can't get any, not the Brewers, but let's say the Tigers. You can't get anything for Tarik Skubal when you lose him in college football. There's no mechanism to get compensated for losing Tarik Skubal.
Well, Andy, I'd say this is a Braves fan who wanted him really bad, or Casey Mize at the deadline. We didn't get either. The return on Skubal was sucked. Like, one of the big criticisms against MLB right now going into the lockout was the Dodgers lowballed prospects and got him because he wanted to go there. Right? Yeah. Like, we're not getting value return on expiring contracts at all.
Yeah, I mean, because you were only trading for 2 months of him anyway.
You're renting. So, yeah, you're renting. Yeah.
Yeah.
And whether or not he signs a long-term deal with the Dodgers is not really contingent on that trade value.
Right. Right. And so the Tigers did what they, you know, got what they could, understanding that situation. But in college football, there's no mechanism for that type of team when they lose somebody like that, because they will. And I mean, we saw it with Darian Mensa this year. Like, now Duke got money.
Do you think this makes Texas A&M the Mets?
It does. I think it does.
Yeah, kind of does. Yeah.
Kinda I would like to genuinely apologize to any Aggie listening to, or watching this. I do apologize to A&M for that. I apologize. I don't apologize to the Mets.
Yeah, it's going to be it's going to be interesting to see, though, because I do think when people look at the Yankees and see them doing this,
yeah,
it does probably soften the barrier.
Mm-hmm.
The resistance to, because my thing with all of this is it's not really yours to sell.
Yeah.
But you could say the same, like, I realize the Steinbrenners own the Yankees, but you could say the same thing about the Yankees. If that's a public trust but it's not.
I could buy stock in Liberty Media, but I'm not ever going to buy enough stock to have control of what Alex Anthopoulos does. The same Packers fans can tell you this, right? Like,
I think the Packers are a really good example of this, because I think a lot of college football programs want to say, "Hey, we're going to be like the Packers, where you own,
yeah." But that's what LSU, right? I think that's what Utah. That's sort of their like plan is, hey, a group of donors. Hey, buy into this and own a piece of it. I think that's a lot of people's plan. Now, the Utah stuff, the PE stuff at Utah, what's interesting is that obviously Utah's a public school, and they had to go down, you know, to the state house there in Salt Lake City and explain themselves of why a public school athletic department that belongs to the people, right, is sort of giving away a portion of its value. They explained it and everything seems to be okay, but that was interesting.
And you know what that explanation hinged on was that a good portion of those lawmakers in the state of Utah who are Utes, either by alumni or fandom, are watching what BYU is doing and figuring out we got to manipulate public policy here if necessary to keep up with the Joneses. Because now we're talking about BYU as the sort of second, like, tier 1A behind Texas Tech, and then everybody else in the league that Utah plays.
Well, I don't know that BYU's there yet. I have a feeling we'll get into stuff Kalani Sitake has said and that relationship going forward. I don't think BYU's quite there yet in terms of being the 1B behind Texas Tech in terms of spending. So
I know we got to get out of this segment. His comments on that, Andy, I think may have been a little off script from what BYU wants everyone to believe at the moment versus the reality of it. And I thought, like, in this dead zone of August, we were talking off air, like, we're in this kind of transition point where we don't have like football news coming out of camp yet. And so then we've wound down stuff like, the
that's
act in DC.
Numbers.
Yeah, that's right. That's we lead the show with jersey numbers. I thought Sitake's comments were really interesting because the perception of BYU would differ from the reality that he's conveying. And I'm curious how calculated that was from the standpoint of BYU. Or was it something that was more spontaneous from their head coach?
I think that is, I wouldn't say it's spontaneous, because what you heard from him this week is exactly what he said on my show at Big 12 Media Days, which was early July. So, but calculated, yes, I would probably say that. I think that's one of those that we are going to need to monitor. I don't know that I don't really have an opinion on it right now, because I don't know if I still fully understand what's going on yet. But I think we need to monitor that one.
No, and that's a program that has suffered from national misperception historically. I think for a long time, people have assumed falsely that, oh, well, they're the Notre Dame of the LDS Church and they're loaded. It has not ever been run like that. It has never been run fat financially, BYU football. I have talked to a litany of assistant coaches who have worked against them, worked for them, and then also judged their market value when talking to BYU. I'm not saying this is a current issue. I'm saying historically, BYU was run as a very lean institution, especially in the independent days in the last, how many years ago they joined the Big 12. But they've never been flush.
Yeah. And yet they had the most expensive basketball player in the country last year. So,
it
that's where people assume,
Yeah.
But they're just going to but I don't know if they're there yet. So again, that is a situation we will monitor. Another situation we are currently monitoring: the level of hate between Michigan and Ohio State, because Michigan's new coach said something, and then Michigan's quarterback said something, and now it's generated a really interesting conversation about how much hate do you need in a rivalry. We'll talk about it when we come back. We're back on the College Football Inquirer. And so at Big Ten Media Days, guys, Kyle Whittingham, the new coach at Michigan, former coach at Utah, was asked if he hated Ohio State. And he pulled the "hate is a strong word. If I told you I hated Ryan Day, I'd be lying to you. I don't hate the man." And that caused a little ripple. But that was nothing compared to this week when John Fanta from NBC, which this interview, I believe, was recorded at Big Ten Media Days with Bryce Underwood, dropped a clip where Bryce Underwood basically called the Ohio State game just another game, which, whoo boy.
Mm-hmm. This reminds
me
of
quite a bit of disagreement over that.
This reminds me of the decades-long nastiness between coaches and even like athletic administrators in Mississippi State and Ole Miss, and how
I was going to bring
Kiffin
that up.
Yeah. And Mike Leach took over. All of a sudden, everybody like loved each other, and they were messing around with each other and being funny, and they were hugging and they were high fiving together. And
Ross,
like the fans hated it. They hated it.
I remember talking to Joe Moorhead. I remember talking to Matt Luke when they took over those universities Mullen and Freeze really took that. Let me back up for a second.
Yeah.
College football fans that are not connected to particular schools love this level of acrimony. It goes back to what Andy was talking about in the initial segment of this is the absurdity that builds the kind of distinct ubiquity of college football, right? Like, oh my God, we're setting yards on fire and we're doing all this nonsense. And
he tried to pee like a dog on the goalpost.
Right. This is the actual unseemly, unfiltered, uncensored origin of the phrase, "it just means more," is that it comes from a pretty nasty place. But when you're involved in the actual rivalry, especially if you're trying to manage individuals, like Ross, you and I have been on the sidelines, fights continually would break out at the Egg Bowl. And I'm not talking about in the stands with fans. I'm talking about, there was a fight. I know there's a fight in the Moorhead era because Michael Thompson, one of the former 80s at Ole Miss, was like physically caught in the middle of it, and they're screaming at Mississippi State players. There's a famous Egg Bowl fight with Deuce McAllister and a guy named Wes Shivers who went on to be an MMA fighter. Mm-hmm. I think that was 96 or 97. So to push this to Ohio State, Michigan, I do think you have to have pressure release valve moments in rivalries. And guys, there's a lot of stuff I'll be glib about, but the amount of unseemly news events that came from Ohio State and from Michigan in the Urban Meyer, Jim Harbaugh era, things were really rough for a long time. There were a lot of arrests. There were a lot of bad character issues with coaches on both sides. There's a meme I see all the time. This is how many people were arrested on the staff under Jim Harbaugh, if you include, you know, the most recent former head coach, Sharon Moore. This thing has gotten Egg Bowl bad. And to push it forward, Andy, we're all sort of fans of the Kyle Whittingham disposition, right? Mm-hmm. Of like, I have
he's interesting because BYU Utah also is a really nasty rivalry.
Yes. Yeah.
But
yeah,
he managed it well on both sides of it. He played at BYU. Dad worked there. He was Utah's coach for 20 years. Like, so he treats it. He, while special, believes it should be respectful, although I do think him losing 3 BYU games in a row is part of the reason why Utah pushed him out to go get a better job.
Yes, and then, well, and we'll figure out who was right about that in maybe a year's time or maybe two.
Yeah.
The referendum, the consensus in the industry, and I think the consensus on this show was, given the unique circumstances of Michigan's coaching search last season, they absolutely hired the best man available. The best man available also has Ohio State ties, I guess you could say, right? Has a relationship with Urban Meyer. does not have a sort of born in the blood acrimony. And look, I did a little mini documentary thing when I was at Vox about the rivalry between Harbaugh and Meyer. These guys were born into this, literally, right? Urban Meyer is from Ohio and grew up cheering for the Buckeyes and wanted to be a coach at Ohio State, wanted to play at Ohio State, couldn't, and went to Cincinnati. Jim Harbaugh was literally born into this, right? With his family. That didn't necessarily produce the most wholesome college football rivalry. So having an outsider like Whittingham come in, I think opposite Ryan Day, who's another guy we could talk a long time about, Ryan Day is reserved. He's, I don't want to say more of an intellectual because that's sort of a character
but
trope.
But I guarantee you, Godfrey, that Ryan Day hates Michigan. Probably, if he didn't before, the moment Harbaugh said the third base thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. But
not just third base, but all the sign stealing stuff. Like, I don't think there's any doubt that Ryan Day does not like Michigan.
But Ryan Day doesn't. But Ryan Day is never going to open a sports bar with his record. Well, he's not going to open a sports bar with his record against Michigan.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have that Meyer level sort of self-aggrandizement of kind of rubbing it in the face. What I'm saying is even if he was 7-0, he wouldn't do that.
Meyer's an interesting one because he treated rivalries differently than almost any other coach I've ever covered. He was obsessed with treating rivalries as special games. Like, whereas Nick Saban would say, obviously the Auburn game is special, but we're trying to keep everything the same if we can. Like, with Meyer, it was not the same. Like, when he was Utah's coach, they put the BYU logos on the urinal cakes. When he was at Florida, there was always something special for Tennessee, Georgia, and Florida State. And, of course, at Ohio State, it was year-round. Like, you can't say Michigan. You have to say the team up north. Putting X's over the M's in words. Like, it was...
I'm glad you brought this up. And Ross, I'm curious if you're thinking the same thing I am, because all of that mentality, including the actual phraseology, the team up north, T-Sun, that school up north, that was imported. Someone was paying attention, and it was Meyer's former OC and quarterbacks coach, Dan Mullen, because the second he got to Starkville, Mississippi, he figured out this is the most expedient way to build brand equity and really to generate donations, both above and below board, all of the energy.
Fans love it.
If we can lock in on Ole Miss.
Right.
Yeah. And that's exactly
right down to the urinal cakes, right? He put the logo, Ole Miss logo, on the urinal cakes. And I believe some of something was also put into the commode, the bowl as well.
In the moment that Hugh Freeze arrives, after Mullen absolutely humiliates Houston Nutt, for the better part of 2 years, Hugh Freeze immediately understands the exact same thing. I would say to the detriment of these people. I think ultimately this is a caustic sort of element that they dealt with, that they played with, and I think it burned both of them ultimately, because then Mullen goes on a losing streak against Ole Miss and he's built his entire brand around beating them. I mean, they ordered gold shoes for the Egg Bowl from Adidas, and then they didn't know how to get rid of all the gold shoes they ordered after they had lost consecutive Egg Bowls. Like, this got stupid in that way that Andy loves. It got really stupid.
This is why college is so great. It's just dumb.
You talk about the brand equity, and I had not thought about this with Bryce Underwood until my co-host at On3, Ari Wasserman, brought it up. It's bad for business for Bryce Underwood to not care about the Ohio State game.
Yeah. Whoa. Okay, hang on.
You're the face of the franchise.
Wait. And you're getting paid a lot of money.
No.
Throw the red meat to the fans.
No,
give them what they
want.
You're in the entertainment business, buddy.
Do you know? Whoa. I get all this. I appreciate this, Andy. What's the real red meat here?
10 years ago, I would have said that. You're just on scholarship. Say whatever you want.
What's the real red meat here? That's winning. Win games.
You threw for 63 yards last year. You can't promise winning.
But that's why he's saying all this. This all has context. Michigan's down. Ohio State's up. They don't care right now. You were just in Columbus. They can be dismissive and aloof.
When they lost to Michigan, his freshman year was like, I hate those guys. I think every day about how to beat those. Because Jeremiah Smith understands the business he's in.
The business of Ohio State, Michigan in that game will be just fine if Bryce Underwood plays a better brand, an improving brand of football this year. If they're 9-10 wins going into the game, that game is not going to suffer financially at all.
I'm not saying period. He's going to suffer financially. I'm saying Bryce Underwood stands to make himself some more money. It goes back to like the Jaden Daniels thing. Jaden Daniels is only hurting himself by taking on LSU. If Bryce Underwood wants Michigan fans to embrace him and love him,
mm-hmm.
then act like you feel the same way they feel.
What would you rather have? A Michigan quarterback who acts and says the same things you do, or a Michigan quarterback that beats Ohio State?
Why not both? Because Ohio State has Julian Sayin,
yeah.
who beat Michigan.
Let me give you a spoiler.
That game becomes your livelihood. He said it to me a week ago.
Julian Sayin, great hair club. Spiritually, I would say he's in the great hair club.
Also, Julian Sayin clearly spending some time in the squat rack. Gonna hold up the hits better this year. Yeah.
Yeah. Little quadzilla action. Mm. Little quadzilla. Yeah. let me give you a spoiler on all this. Michigan wins this game this year. The quarterback's going to be singing a very, very different tune post game. I think what he's trying to do is, Andy, think about this kid's situation. The shoulders, what he's bearing right now, the perception of him financially, what went on with the staff who recruited him there. I think they need a little boring consistency at Michigan. God knows, from top to bottom, they could use some boring consistency at Michigan. I think you're going to get all the vitriol you could ever ask for if Bryce Underwood is running in a winning touchdown against Ohio State in November. He will talk that mess. I guarantee it. I think so. If they run up to him on the field with the Fox mic and they're going to be like, Bryce, what are you feeling right now? He's going to be like, just another game. I doubt that.
No, yeah, probably not.
I hope so.
Or if he says it, it's going to be really glib.
He's trying to be too cool for school.
Mm.
Like watching that interview.
Yeah. I mean, I think but you want consistency out of there's a lot of coaches who listen to this show. And I think they understand what I'm trying to posit here right now. Given the situation that Bryce Underwood specifically is in right now, stoking the biggest rivalry in the sport and that fan base right now is probably not the smartest thing. Michigan just needs to put one foot in front of the other. They got Oklahoma in week two. Like, let's go baby steps, and then we can talk about how Ohio is they're the bowels of the universe. See, whatever.
You can still take your baby steps. You can do all that stuff and just be like, I hate them. Now give me some endorsement deals.
I mean, he's got 10 million. I think he's probably good at the moment.
I don't know. Just listen, you know what's better than 10 million?
Beating Ohio State and then opening a sports bar in Ann Arbor that says 4-0.
You know
what's
better than
10
million,
whatever,
beating Ohio State and opening a sports bar in Ann Arbor? More money!
I just defended Michigan for an entire segment. I got to go.
I'm so glad I got to go into that.
I got to go. I gotta go talk to a priest.
We all have to go. And when we come back on Tuesday, I mean, Lord knows who's going to be arguing over jersey numbers by then. But there is a segment we've been holding on to that someone shouted out to Godfrey at an airport.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to Alex.
Yeah, I would like to encourage people to just yell at us.
Yeah, let me
on airport program this show.
No, Andy, please don't have that. Don't encourage
why
them.
Why do I feel like
don't encourage them?
Why
masses.
Do I feel like Andy and I are fine with this and the third co-host is not?
Yeah. Yeah, let's not do that.
I predict, barring another Heisman Trophy winner yelling at the current coach of his school and sending a cease and desist letter,
we're supposed to talk. Is it 2 weeks now? We've said we should talk about USC and haven't.
Yeah, it's like 2 weeks. Alex in the airport. We're gonna hook you up at some point. We promise.
Yeah, I was in the Albany airport. So yeah, I have people come up all the time and say nice things. And
Albany, Georgia.
You just New York. I am like legally allowed to cross the Mason-Dixon, Andy. Albany, New York's the state capital of New York. Albany, Georgia. Does Albany, Georgia have an airport?
I don't. I'm
probably,
sure they have an airstrip.
Probably not.
I don't think they have an airport.
Yeah. No, Albany, New York. I spend time amongst the Yankees. I am kind to them, Andy. We will talk some Big Ten. Three SEC graduates who started the show of trying to figure out which numbers their alma maters retired. We will talk Big Ten. Yes, I am anxious to talk USC because as goes USC, so goeth the carousel, gentlemen.
Yes, indeed.
How's that for a tease to next week?
All right, when we return. Ooh,
now we have no choice. No matter who gets mad about a jersey number, we got to lead with that.
Yell at Ross at the airport.
That's a sexy tease.
Yes, what we learned today is yell at Ross Dellinger in an airport.
I think that's the lesson. Also, call your lawyer and throw a fit if somebody wears your number.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you Tuesday.